Greetings, this is the automatically deleted husband. Husband, I'm very early today. It's only 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And there's a reason for that. Is because in about 3 hours, I intend to walk out the door and take a 3 mile hike, just a hair over 3 miles, because it's like 3.5 or 3.25 to get to Publix, and I'll be less than 1/4 mile away from Publix, so just over 3 miles. And I'm giving me an hour to do that because it's hot and I wanted to have some extra time to cool off. So I figure if I walk at a slower pace and then have some time to cool off, because I'm sure I'll be covered in sweat when I get there. But the plan is to meet at least two gentlemen and, Lord willing, others, to have a dialogue as brothers, as mutual followers of Christ. That is my hope and my intent. To prepare for this, I've done a lot of study. I've done a lot of study on, there are numerous individuals, groups. The Duran, I think, is very good. This one gentleman that I've sent some links for, Gonzalo Lira, who is in Ukraine, has done some really interesting things. Eva Bartlett, who's been, in Ukraine, she's the woman who went to that mass grave of 30,000 people and found it wasn't, I've looked at some of those things. I have, the video from the Ukrainian state television where the one guy went and said, we need to go kill Russian kids so they don't grow up and become our enemies, quoting Adolf Eichmann. I have that video. So I have, stuff from both sides. I do have I think it's three videos that was done by Oliver Stone, starting with Ukraine and Fire. That's was done six years ago, whatever it was. And then there's been some subsequent ones, especially because of the events of, what's been happening, which talked about the Maidan Revolution and things of that nature. So, I've done some study and I've tried to get some study on, I can probably tell you more than most Americans about who Mr. Banderas is, the gentleman who very much sided with Adolf Hitler during World War II and is an icon for the neo-Nazis within Ukraine today. So the right sector and Azov Battalion and so forth are very much embrace him. They have the monuments and so forth. I'm aware of that, and my hope is to, understanding that I did a voicemail on June 13th, specifically reviewing the Ukraine on Fire and had quoted in their generational hatred, because that line is what really stood out to me. Because I thought that was a concise way to say what I've seen throughout in my study of history. World War I, World War II, and, more recent things and so forth, both in Europe and, U.S. involvement in, for example, in Vietnam, in Iraq, and so forth. But the generational hatred idea is really sunk in, because it's the idea that your predecessors did something evil to my predecessors, therefore I want revenge against you, which is obviously contrary to what the Bible says. A father should not be put to death for the sons, and the sons not for the father. Those things really concern me, and I'm hoping to have perhaps something on that, some dialogue on that. And I did read the emails that I sent over a period of months in order to set this up for today. And it's not fluff. I do wonder if my emails got to the secretary and never got to the gentleman. I don't know. I guess I'll find out. I'm going there. I have taken a tablet with those emails there with the video I did in hand, not necessarily to use them. I might have to refer to the emails, but it's because I'm taking this seriously. It is my hope, as I continued, I have I have on multiple occasions with different individuals that I meet on the street who happen to be black men, talk to them about the issues between white and black with here within the Cleveland area in order to get a better understanding of what's felt here versus what you see in the news. And those kind of issues, that's what really, you know, these are the issues that motivate me, because what is proclaimed and the reality are two different things. You know, I get along fine with the black people in the community here. Not a problem. The idea that because I'm white, I'm a racist, this is the generational hatred. This is the problem. Because I am white, that therefore I am obligated to pay somebody who is black some form of remuneration for the slavery in the U.S. 100 plus years ago. Again, that is the sins of the father issue. And the problem is there's fallacy in that. And if it was based on love, you wouldn't be dealing with what happened in the past, but the slavery that's happening today, because it's huge, including a whole lot of black people. So, you know, there's what's portrayed. And then, of course, there's the issue of what is portrayed has been limited. You know, the obvious example in the case of what I'm doing today is, I'm finding, I have several sources, but the two make, you know, most of the sources I have are individuals or a couple, two, three people that I follow. You know, for example, again, Eva Bartlett or the Duran. Let's say those. Eva Bartlett, one person. The Duran, two people. So really, really, really small. Anyway, there are others. But then I do look at two of the major players, and both of them happen to be state-sponsored, RT and Al Jazeera. The reason I've chose those two is because they're polar opposites. It's like CNN versus Fox News. The problem with CNN versus Fox or MSNBC versus Fox or whatever is they're very much on the same page in so many things. And they're fluff. You know, and both of them are brought to you by Pfizer. So, and it's useless. And their techniques, they're intellectually stupid. It's fluff. Whereas, at least with RT and to a reasonable degree, also with Al Jazeera, there's more substance. Al Jazeera has some people on them that I think are superb in what they deliver, the content, the depth, and so forth. Some of them are very good and I think very rational. Some of them, you can see, there's an agenda. And, you know, again, what I would do if I were, let's say, oh, I don't know, one of these, they don't call him king. Is it a king in Qatar, or is he a sultan or something? Whatever. Anyway, the head dude, the monarch. What I would do if I wanted to promote my particular brand, I would build an organization, Al Jazeera, and make them credible. And the way to make them credible is make sure you put out a whole lot of stuff that really is credible, that has some substance to it, is the information is valid. Because if I build that reputation, then I can produce something that has that same aura, but promotes my agenda. Because now I come to you, and I come to you as credible. And when I come to you with my bias mixed up with that credibility, my bias will get through. As opposed to if I come to you and I'm only this, only this, only this, which, you know, so I think Al Jazeera does it real well. And again, you know, one of the reasons why I believe, because there is, it continued to happen, Shireen Abu Akleh, the journalist that worked for Al Jazeera that was killed in Jerusalem, and I think it's reasonably agreed that it probably was, at least I think they're saying at least probably was an IDF soldier. But that debate's going on. It's going on in the UN and so forth. But I think the only reason that's going on is because there's value here in that here Al Jazeera, which is not not a Christian organization, yet they had an employee, the reporter, Shireen, who is a Christian, and killed by Israeli troops. And that's something that gives them a lot of weight on the world stage, because they can play this up. And it's a big slap in the face to the country of Israel, to the IDF and so forth. And because of the fact she is Christian, at least, a member, and because of the videos they have of the funeral procession of her, where the IDF soldiers attacked the funeral procession. This was an attack. This is clear. I mean, if you want to try to look into that and see that wasn't it. No, that was an attack. So you can play those things up, and RT, I think, or the Russian government seems to be doing a lot of the similar things in a different way. The argument I hear is the idea that whenever, if they have something that's true, they'll offer you the truth. If they don't have it, they'll be silent, because it's a credibility thing. And that's why, and of course, the competition, the other side will say, well, they're hiding, whatnot. But whatever you do in order to instill tension. But they've been far more accurate. But the issue is, what are they not saying? And this becomes, an interesting question. But when you look militarily at what happens in Ukraine, because I was reminded of it. It's the Baghdad Bob when we were in invading Iraq. And I mean, when we invaded Iraq, we did the shock and awe thing. We leveled everything. We destroyed everything, military, civilian, everything. We just flattened. We were highly destructive. It goes back to Madeleine Albright, the Secretary of State during the Clinton administration. We feel the death of 500,000 children was worth it. Which obviously became a famous line because it showed the absolute cruelty of our invasion. What we're seeing now militarily in Ukraine is basically the Donbass region has been taken by Russia, and all the way up, the Mariupol, which was the big city in the southeast part, that's now, and apparently coming back to life. The big change is they use rubles instead of the Ukrainian currency and so forth, but the normal life is coming back. Reconstruction is happening. Public transportation and so forth, all those things are running again. Supermarkets are open and people are at the beach, apparently. So those things are happening. So there's a recovery there. And it gave a land bridge all the way up to where Crimea bumps into the rest of Ukraine, because Ukraine had dammed a river that feeds water into Crimea. And of course, one of the first things that was done is that dam was blown up. It was an earthen dam, so water can flow back into Crimea. But apparently what's happening is the Russians are continuing with the intent of heading all the way to Transnistria, which is the eastern part of Moldova, and connect. And what that will do is it isolates Odessa from the rest of Ukraine, the rest of the remaining part of Ukraine, and they wait. Because they'll starve off Ukraine, the Ukrainian military in Odessa, and then simply take it, which is effectively what they did with Mariupol. Because I think it's interesting how what they did is they because you can see all the videos, the pictures of this huge line of trucks and military vehicles that they had when this whole thing started in February on the road to Kiev. And I'm going to find out today the difference between Kyiv and Kiev. So you have that big line. They never went into Kiev. But what they did is they kept the troops to surround, to protect Kiev. So they occupied them in the meantime with just a bunch of trucks. They didn't have to go to battle with them. And then in the meantime, they took care of the Donbass, Mariupol, and so forth. And then they left. And what what Ukraine is doing is saying, aha, we defeated them. They got fooled. Yeah, they call this maneuver warfare. And the Russians did it superbly. But the Russians are not doing good PR on the world stage. Ukraine is. And, you know, the thing I think about is some time back, I'll try to remember to put that link in there, I gave the video from Denis Rancourt, who was asked why people will wear the mask. You know, it's here. I've got it. I really have a mask. Still unused. Because, again, I've never worn a mask. Why do people who have worn a mask refuse, even though the evidence is overwhelming? It's not only ineffective, it's self-destructive. It harms you. But why do people do that? The answer he gave, which I think is correct, is they've invested so much time, so much effort, so much of them into the, I'm part of the group that wears the mask in order to protect grandma and my neighbors and so forth and protect myself. And to admit I was fooled, it's going to cost me, so I won't go there. In the same way, if I'm a Ukrainian and I believe that my country is right, and I look at, for example, the line of trucks on the way to Kiev, and I feel that the leaving of them, I'm not going to look at the military strategy of that. When somebody says, oh, look, we defeated the Russians here, I'm going to grab onto that. Even if I find out it's untrue that we defeated the Russians there, if I find out that's untrue, I'm going to reject that because I have too much invested in it. And I think about that. I've got too much invested in being a follower of Muhammad, being a follower of the Big Bang, being a follower of Buddha or whatever. And to go and say, no, the reality is Jesus Christ is the creator who entered discretion. You may have heard of that recently. To find that out is difficult because now it's not just the truth, but it's my pride that is a barrier. And I would rather lie, cheat, steal, and harm others, have that generational hatred, than look at the truth and offer grace. This is really the big concern. And I'm continuing to try to understand that, figure it out this. That's why I approach black men and try to engage them in conversation. Again, the difference between a black man and a white man is skin color. That's it. That's it. The difference between a Russian and a Ukrainian. You know, what is it? Again, the thing that's fascinating is when you look in the Bible, you'll see what's frequently translated as race. It comes from the idea of genus. The way we classify animals, for example, and where we get the word gene from. And then, of course, the other similar word is ethnos, where we'll frequently translate it to like nations or something of that nature, or even Gentiles. That's why I think it's so interesting what it says and what it's translated to gives us often a different connotation. But in both cases, what you're looking at basically is there's a common characteristic of a group of people. The obvious, you know, a black man, a white man. What's the common characteristic that distinguishes the two? Let me think. Whereas, what's the common characteristic that distinguishes a Ukrainian from a Russian? Obviously, for most people in the West, most people in Africa, for example, to look at a Ukrainian and a Russian standing next to each other, it's going to be pretty hard to tell the difference. But there are differences. They're more subtle than the difference between black skin and white skin. And so, you know, hopefully I may find out a little bit more about this. But then again, because somebody happens to have black skin, I have no license to hate him. They're a human being created in the image of God. Because if I'm a Ukrainian or a Russian and I look at a Russian or Ukrainian, I have no license to hate that other person. Because they're human beings created in the image of God. And my concern is, what does the world want to do? They want to instill hate. Because when you instill hate, then you need somebody to protect you and then to go fight for. And that's so much of the problem. Anyway, I'm going there today. I don't have an agenda per se, except for the fact to hopefully develop perhaps a relationship with one or more men, and to maybe get some insight, and who knows, leave it in the hands of the Lord. But again, as I've described in one of my recent emails, I'm pushy. You know, I look at look at the model of Paul. I would suggest he was pushy. He was definitely pushy. And, you know, again, what did he do in Acts? What did he do in lots of places? He would go into the assemblies. The assemblies, usually seen in one of two words, Greek words, the ekklesia or the synagogue, where people would gather together and he would engage them. And again, the thing that's so important is, I will contend, what happened, especially around the turning point was, the 300s, when Constantine effectively seated the Roman Catholic Church. Because once you have that institution in place, you now have the idea of the worship service, the ceremonial aspect of it, and the homily or the sermon. And that's a monologue. And in doing that, you close off the communications, and you don't have the ability to do what you see in the Gospels, where Jesus would go and engage people that met together. It wasn't he went there, no, here we have a guest speaker. No, he went together to interact, because it was dialogue. You can see that directly, because I just read it in Acts, where Paul goes to a city, whatever city it was, and they did the reading of the scripture. Obviously at the time was the Tanakh, the Tanakh or the Septuagint. I'm not sure. You're the stranger here. Do you have anything you'd like to say? I mean, that's basically what's said. I'm modernizing the language, and he expressed the Messiah that you're looking for is Jesus Christ. But the reason he was able to say that is because the gatherings was not somebody getting behind a pulpit and giving a monologue. This is not an issue that I want to get onto today when I meet this pastor. But also, I sent my postcard. I was wondering, who would I send it today, especially considering what's happening? I sent it to Render Keynes. Reason being, I am going to see another pastor, and we have to have an interpreter, because, you know, I've listened to him. He speaks Russian. So I now get to meet him face to face. But there'll be an interpreter there. And post our meeting is a gathering of Russians who are going to speak Russians in their gathering. And I don't know if I'll stay for that or not, depending, you know, I'll play that one by ear. My assumption is I will leave. Either way. You know, I'm not orchestrating this. I'm just going. But if this pastor, a Russian man, is willing to talk to a pushy guy trying to reach out to him, and I did reach out for months, I've been reaching out to Render Keynes for years. We don't need an interpreter. We could talk face to face. I could do that with Chris Bitterman. I could do that with Jim Cross. I could do that with my wife and my kids. Right now, the Russians are demonized. But I have a Russian man who's going to talk to me. Pastors are praised, but they won't talk to me, except for this one Russian man. Interesting paradox. I did upload yesterday an update to Chauffeur Nexus, and it's on I have three servers running, and the one that runs Kozlowska.org has been for some time. When an email would come in, it would say, through it's called SMTP, a simple mail transfer protocol. That's basically how emails are sent, and I've been receiving those for a long time. If somebody sends to my machine, I'll take it and say, oh, thank you, and it disappears. And I've been doing that for a long time because there is no valid email that would come to there. But I left that there as a way to kind of start things. The difference is the version I put up online yesterday has now will take, oh, thank you, I've got that email, and I put it in my hard drive. In 12 hours, I had about 3,600 emails. So what is happening is called a honeypot. If you go into computer security, you'll find this idea of honeypot. The idea of, oh, use me, use me. And a lot of the spams and whatnot, because what I see is spam, clearly. I spam in attacks. Well, which, you know, spam is made of a lot of things. It's the advertising, the false advertising, the stuff. I want to get something, get a virus onto your computer because I want to turn your computer into what's called a zombie computer, so I can use your computer. Various things of that nature. Those things are being sent. Let me rip you off kind of stuff. Those things are part of spam. So there's lots of stuff. And so when you find a place where you can send it and resend it, and that will forward it, people will use that because they're trying to hide identities. And of course, obviously, I'm not forwarding. But the other thing is they're coming to email addresses at kozlowski.org, including ones that I don't use. There's a whole bunch going to Erica Lee, for example, and a lot is spam because I've checked a few of them. They're spam. They're spam in the sense that we're trying to get you. I find this interesting, and I did some improvement on the tools to see the emails today, because obviously I have a focus today. But then tomorrow, Lord willing, I will. I'm not sure if I'm going to make it tomorrow or Friday. We'll start to use that to send emails out in order to say, here, it's live, it's real. Do you want to be part? Because, again, I'm not playing softball here. There's a great example, Lavabit. This, in a lot of respects... I respect the guy, what he did. Years ago, he had provided an email service, and we know nothing about your email. He had a lot of things in there to protect the users, to a degree. It was more protection than obviously Google, but he had some email. Users that, some were notable. A gentleman by the name of Edward Snowden had an email with him. But the U.S. government said to him, we have, one of these, the documents say, we need to see, your data because we're investigating this particular thing, person or whatever. And he was offering private communications and everything was encrypted. And so the government says, we are giving you this document. You need to hand over the keys. And what I really respect is he said, okay, I will hand over the keys. What he did is not hand over a USB drive or a CD or something of that nature or via email or whatnot, the key, which is like in that case, it was probably a couple hundred character, random characters, what seemed like random characters. That's the key. And it's not the kind of thing you would want to write down by hand. So what he did is he printed it out. Instead of sending it electronically, he printed it out in a fancy font, very small. So the idea of using an optical scanner in order to read that would be difficult. But he complied. So he complied lawfully. And then he went back to his office and destroyed his servers. Wiped out his entire business. Shut everything down and erased it all. I respect that man. I'm trying to do the same thing in a sense. The difference being, Lavabit was a central player. There's like Proton Mail, there's and so forth. There's a bunch of others, Silent Circle and others that are doing similar things, but you're with an organization. With Shofar Nexus technology, you're not with an organization, but you're with individuals, and as described yesterday, multiple individuals. So you go to somebody and they have nothing, especially with the technique. If I get to the point where I have the Matri Koshika protocol or the Matri protocol completed, what it gives you is the data on your servers that are, and it's not that you have an account that is one of many accounts on a server. You have a server. Tiny, but you have a server. And the data on that server is encrypted with a key that only you have. And it's not, you know, so many times the key is on the server. No, it's not there. So anyway, I won't go into all that. But the point is, this is not fluff stuff. Or as the one gentleman said, this scares the living daylights out of you, out of people. Puts you on the wrong side of the NSA. I'm not going to stop. I have nothing to lose. Because again, yes, there are people who are going to use this for foul things. There are people whose life is at stake if they don't have something like this. Those are the people to be an ally to. Just because somebody uses the same technology for foul pornography, I'm not going to cut off the person who's trying to save his life. I can't do that. You know, it's the argument about guns, because obviously guns continues to be in the news. Yes, a gun will kill somebody. In the hands of a vicious person, they can kill more than if they don't have a gun. The number of people, you know, again, I'll give you the link to that too. The one site that they do a lot of good stuff, again, a couple of times, I think they blew it. WWUTT, when we understand the text. They did a description of, you know, does God say, you can have a gun? And the way they did it, I thought was very good, because they used the verse, and I think it's Deuteronomy, that I wondered, because I studied years ago about if you somebody comes to steal from you and whatnot, and you kill them, if they die in your house and whatnot, you're fine. And they explained that one very 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 well. In other words, you have the right to kill to protect your family, your property, and they did it very well. But the other, you know, the other thing is, you're a 120-pound young lady being approached by a 300-pound man who is all muscle, probably all lard, but anyway, it's called the equalizer. And, you know, and again, the idea that, oh, guns should be only in the hands of the government, where guns are outlawed, like Chicago, New York, California, and so forth, that's where you have the greatest murder rate. That statistic that I find so fascinating, you pull out Chicago, New York, Baltimore, I think, and San Francisco, whatnot, you pull those cities or those states out of the statistics about the U.S. is one of the safest places in the world, by far, over so many other countries, statistically. Those states alone are the place where the horrendous death is occurring, and it's occurring in places where the regulation is the highest. So the obvious solution is more regulation. It's the idea of vote harder. Anyway, so much. I was going to do something quick before I left, and I didn't. I have the joy of walking in hot weather to get good and sweaty to speak to a man whose native tongue is Russian. To share, I hope, a joy to be fellow followers of Christ, to mutually encourage. The sum paracaleo, again, one of my favorite words. To mutually encourage, to show mutual love to hopefully inspire both ways. I'm not going there to lecture. I'm going there for the insights. I want to see through someone else's eyes. That's probably the best way to say it. I want to see through someone else's eyes. I am grateful, for example, my Mormon friend, to be able to see through his eyes. I'm grateful when I talk to the black men to see through their eyes what they're seeing. I talk to many Hispanic people around and try to see through their eyes. You know, my neighbor's a really good friend. We don't speak the same language at all. But I mean, the interaction is so joyful. And to hear a man, I assume he's Mexican, you know, could be, you know, from wherever. But to hear him say, "Hey, amigo." That brings a joy in me that's fantastic. Because he and I are different. And I love him. I love the relationship I have with my Mormon friend where we don't see eye to eye. I love the relationship I have, you know, when that, a couple years ago, when a young black man pulled his car up to me and said, "Do you want a ride?" The same man did it twice. And I went out of my way to make sure I could shake his hand, to thank him. Declined the ride because I want to walk. But there's a joy in that. To interact with people who are so different with you and mutually encourage. Oh, what is the word for that? Oh, yeah, sum paracaleo. It's fantastic. Oh, I'm getting long. I'll let you know about this afternoon, tomorrow. My lady, my wife, that pushy fellow, you know, the pushy pro-life activist, he's still around, and he's still pushy. My lady, my wife, I love you. I really love you. And I want you back.